Hello and welcome to the Next 100 Days podcast. My name is Graham Arrowsmith.
And my name's Kevin Appleby. So today, Graham, we're going to talk to somebody who's got a very famous name for an American and specialised in helping people escape from the United States.
Well, I don't know about that. It might be bringing them in, never mind shipping them out. Rob Lee is the co-founder of Swift Passport and Visa Services. Rob, welcome to the Next 100 Days podcast.
Thanks for having me, Kevin and Graham.
Well, you know what? Did Kevin have it right? Are you trying to bring people in or ship them out?
We're shipping them out. So anyone leaving the U.S., whether they mainly U.S. passport holders, but anyone that's a resident of the U.S. traveling mainly to China, India, Vietnam, now Brazil again, just various countries that need visas to travel for work, business,
right,
tourism, things like that.
I get it. So you're not getting involved in this $1,000 ship them back to wherever they came from deal.
No, thank God. No, not at all.
We need a bit of that over here as well.
I fully get those things that you do from the UK point of view. I remember sitting in PwC's office in central London with flights booked to go to Saudi Arabia. And I was sitting there literally to the last minute waiting for my passport to come back with the appropriate visa in so that when I got on the plane, they'd actually let me off at the other end.
Right. That's exactly what we do. Saudi Arabia is another big one. The amount of wild stories that we've seen over the years is, you know, telling someone that, like, speaking of Saudi Arabia, telling someone that had a land crossing visa, they were supposed to go to Riyadh, but they only had a land crossing visa. So we arranged for it so they could fly to Bahrain and drive in, you know, all sorts of crazy, crazy stories.
You obviously enjoy your work and you're obviously helping people with it's a bit like you're an administrator in a way, but it's not really how you are. You're an entrepreneur, aren't you? So basically the whole idea of this is you're running a business and you're helping people with these necessary engagements with other countries. That's kind of important, as Kevin has just said, that, you know, without those sorts of necessary documents, he wouldn't have been able to fly to Riyadh.
Right.
That's so exactly right. What got you into it then, Rob?
Great story, actually. My wife, Lori, and I started the business, and we lived in Costa Rica and Panama for, I think it was about 18 months total. And we lived in Panama at the end of that 18 months. And there's a couple times where we needed to extend our stay in Panama. And we got to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Panama City, and like, oh, there's like a 8-hour wait to get just to get into the building. And there's this guy kind of like, hey, pay me and I'll get you to the front. So that was our first experience with it. And after we left Panama, we ended up in Chicago, and somehow we needed the service again for something else, and we didn't really have anything else to do, so we're like, we want to travel, so why don't we do that? Little did I know that it didn't lead to travel right away, but it was kind of fell in our lap, and we took it from just like a random idea to where it's at today.
So if you had to sort of describe to us, what is it that you do most? You know, your job is about passports and visas, but, you know, what fills out most of the Monday to Friday? What's the grunt of all of this? What's the basic stuff that you're doing?
The company, what we're doing is we provide detailed instructions on how to obtain whatever visa or U.S. passport, so we can get U.S. passports issued in about 3 days right now. So it's these primarily business travelers. We do work with a lot of individuals as well, but they've realized either they need a visa to go to China or they're traveling next week and their passport's expired. So we simplify the process, provide them with all the tools that they need to get this document, whether it's a visa or a passport. And then we hand deliver in some cases to like the US passport agencies. So if you were applying for a passport, you would send us in all this information. We hand deliver it to them, and then we retrieve it back from them when it's done. Same thing with the China visas. And what's come about recently, I guess over the last 5 years or so, is a rise of electronic visas. So we also help people with electronic visas. It sounds like it's an easy thing that anyone can do, and they can. However, dealing with like an Indian government website isn't necessarily for the faint of heart.
No, I get that.
I quite get that because as an individual, you're only going to apply for one of these visas probably once. So it's a completely foreign process. Maybe you've got to apply for a visa twice. It's two different countries. So the process is going to be different each time. Whereas you're dealing with these day in, day out. So you know all of the ins and outs. You know why things get rejected. Therefore, you can stop that happening up front. So yeah, I absolutely get the service, particularly if you're like me. Very little notice. Oh, Kevin, you're doing a 3-month contract in Saudi Arabia. Right, how do we get you there next week? Yeah.
Exactly.
It's
And we're constantly on top of what's changing, and as you mentioned, there's little tips and tricks and nuances that that you can find all the information that we provide if you do enough research online. Like the consulates or the embassies provide the information. However, there's all these little tips and tricks, and like, well, that's not going to be accepted, or this is, and we're constantly evolving knowledge base, so to speak.
Do you have a failure rate then, Rob? Do you, I mean, out of every 100 visas, let's say, do some of them just get rejected back when they get to the airport or whatever?
Not so any rejection would come before they travel. For instance, if you're applying for a Chinese visa, they'll tell you, no, we're not accepting this. And then they'll give us information, hey, Graham, we need a background check, an FBI background check if you're here in the US. And like, oh, okay, well, so you go get an FBI background check, we resubmit it. Very rarely is something completely rejected, and when it is, it's way outside of our control. One of the benefits of using us is as we provide you with the information, we will check the documents before we submit them. So if we receive all your paperwork, we'll say, hey, we need a different photo. This isn't going to work. So we're able to kind of pare down what might go wrong. Then again, we don't know everything about people that apply for these visas. Sometimes their background comes sneaking up on them.
Like Kevin's really, he got rejected several times before he got into Saudi, didn't you, Kevin?
Actually, no, Graham, I got in first attempt.
Yeah, I'll believe you. But so the when it comes to countries that give you the most grief, presumably China are head and shoulders above everybody else.
China has a quite extensive application process. Ironically, up until like 2020, it was probably the easiest visa that we did. It was like a 4-page handwritten application. Like people would have like all the information saved in a PDF, and then they just basically change whatever needed to be changed and then send in the application. Now it's like a 10-page online form that needs to be printed, and it's asked like people are uncomfortable giving the information that they're asking. They're asking about like all the children you have, and we even had one case where the consulate rejected an application from someone who on a previous application said they didn't have any children, or they said that they had children, and they're applying again, and they said that they didn't have any, and they wanted to see proof that they didn't have the children anymore. And I was like, ooh. So there's some details that go into the background of
Yeah,
these
I guess.
applications.
What is it that they're frightened of?
I
I don't mean
think
just the Chinese. I mean, because, I mean any country. What is it that people are really frightened of?
that's a great question. And I think I say this with all due respect to American travelers, but I think Americans might tend to think that like, oh, we can go anywhere and we can, like at least up until recently, you could pretty much travel freely without much There are very few countries that we needed visas to, and the thought of providing all this personal information, I think like, why do I need to do that? I'm trying to go there for tourism and give them money, but they, I don't think they realize the extent of which other people to come to the US, they have to give up months and months of their time to apply to get, in some cases, just a tourist visa to come visit family. And I think people are like it causes a little friction providing all this personal information, like they're going to spy on them or something. You know, it's I think that's kind of what it comes down to, especially when the headlines of the news are not favorable of a certain country. Well, I'm not giving the Chinese government my information. And,
No, I get it. So do you think that the Chinese government might be frightened that some of these because presumably, even if you give all that information, they can still say no. So that there must be something behind that. They must think that they're going to be spying or they're going to be disruptive in some way to their country.
I think the Chinese, well, a lot of countries, Brazil and China, they're very big on reciprocity. So what we do to Chinese nationals coming to the US is in turn what they do back. And I think with the global, my personal opinion, we've been doing this for almost 20 years, is that countries, they want to know who's coming into their country, and like they kind of have to know in a lot of ways, like who are you letting in, and like what have you done before, and I think it's just like you gotta protect your country. And
Unless, of course, they get on a dinghy in France and go across the English Channel and just and then it's just a straight shot into a 5-star hotel. I mean,
exactly
it's
right.
just too easy. We don't know who the bloody hell they are, but they'll
And the
turn
French
up
Coast
here.
Guards are now giving them all life jackets, apparently.
Well, it's what a life. You know, I mean, the thing is that they're not demand, well, they are demanding asylum, but they're not asylum seekers because they've traveled through France, and the last time I heard, the French was fairly safe, you know, a bit miserable generally as a nation, but I mean, other than that, their eyes are a bit too close together. But apart from that, they're quite a nice nation and decent food, better than here. But no, they'll risk their life in the busiest shipping lane in the world, and yet, just to get here and a free lunch. And that's basically what's going on over here. So, you know, the idea that they've come with a visa, it'd be wonderful if they did, because my daughter-in-law's Brazilian, and for her to become an English, sorry, a British national, which she is now, obviously co-British and Brazilian, it was hugely problem. And she was married to my son, you know, so it was very, very detailed, to the point. I think she was asked. One of the questions that she was asked was about soap operas. Well, as a phrase to a Brazilian who's pr never, probably almost never watched, you know, my son didn't really watch TV when they were together at university. But so it was like, what was a soap opera? And it felt like an unfair question. Might not have been to the person posing it, but it definitely was to the applicant. So, you know, I think you have to be reasonable in terms of the questions being asked. It's not necessarily a visa thing that, but it's when you're coming in to be considered a citizen. And I guess one of the first steps towards becoming a citizen is the use of a visa.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the first step to the legal path. Citizenship.
Well, yeah. Well, of course, you don't have to be told much about the illegal path either, given your previous precedent. But he just forgot to shut the border door, didn't he? I mean,
Yeah, they did.
he sent Camilla down. Oh, not Camilla. What's her name? Camilla. And I don't think she could find it, could she, Kevin? That door. That I'll leave it open anyway.
I'll leave it open.
Yeah,
Well,
and.
isn't that the whole border? Did the former president say he was going to build a wall along it and never actually got around to it?
No, because he was stopped
Start, they
by
started
the
that.
left, but he's doing it again. So good luck to him. Anyway, just going off the subject slightly, but you when it comes to providing these services, Is it quite an expensive thing that your service?
I would say, as far as our industry standards go, it's well, let me take a step back. It's an inexpensive service for the amount of time and energy and anxiety. If you're looking at the whole of a trip, the cost of it's only a fraction of the cost. And ironically, people get the most frustrated at, oh, you're charging this amount of money to do this? It's like, well, you're calling us because you're in a pickle, so to speak, and you want it done quickly. And if you can choose to do it on your own, but for instance, the Chinese government or the Chinese embassy here, they have a bunch of different consulates across the US, and you could live in Colorado, and the closest consulate to you is either Los Angeles or Chicago. So you either have to go in person or use a service. And so then it's like, oh, okay, the cost is justified, but it's also just a peace of mind too. It is an added fee, and it's also an added convenience and peace of mind for sure.
And do you dispatch your wife with all of these pieces of paper? Because she's
Yeah.
probably prettier than you, and therefore she'll probably get the, you know, oh, no, it's all right, love.
Yeah, she goes to seal all the business deals. Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably a very wise thing to do.
But seriously, if there's that amount of travel within the US to potentially do to get to the various consulates, how many folks do you have working for you, Rob, to provide the service?
We have our main office is in Chicago, and we have six people in our Chicago office, and then we have an office in Washington, D.C. and Miami. And then we have two people, one in Mexico City that does a lot of the online stuff. And then another person overseas that is kind of a support personnel. So we have a total of 10 people right now. And it's a, everyone kind of has different roles, but they have a specific role. Like they're the China visa person, or they're the India visa, or the passport person. So everyone kind of has their specialty, and they're the expert within our office. But we also, everyone's able to do everything else if, you know, someone's out of the office for whatever reason. So we develop like a team of experts. And with China visas, for instance, I don't have an exact number, but I would say easily, you know, 3,000 Chinese visas last year. Easy, I mean, maybe way more than that, but like we process so many China. We actually share a wall with the Chinese consulate in Chicago. So right next door is the Chinese consulate. So like we're just constantly back and forth working with the consulate. So it's just hundreds and hundreds of these visas a day at the consulate. So these people are walking by our office, and it's quite a show.
Yeah.
So would you say that the majority of your visas are to go
Yeah.
to China, or is it
China.
are there other v I mean India, obviously. I had the experience of going to India last November, and I seem to remember that visa process was somewhat of a challenge. And there was one part of it, and I'm really struggling to remember what it was, but it was quite involved, and we were really unsure which way to go, which and it could have been, is this a business trip? Is it almost social? And it was a bit of both.
Yeah, it's like, is it business, or is it like, are you going for meetings, or is it a conference that you're going to? And it's like,
It was it.
yeah,
We didn't want
there's
to lie, but we didn't. But
exactly.
we couldn't tell the truth, if you know what I mean. It was just structured in such a way that it was, as it happened, it turned out to be more holiday than it was business. But it was a bit of business as well. So basically, it's a bit awkward.
Yeah, that's what we, in that case, what we always recommend for travelers leaving the US, if they're going to be doing any business at all, it's like with a business visa, you can kind of get a two for one. You can go do tourist activities, but if you're walking into a high rise in the middle of, you know, let's say Sao Paulo or something, and you don't have a business visa and you have a tourist visa, you know, who knows what could happen. Or the common place that would happen would be Thailand. A lot of countries don't need tourist visas to get to Thailand. However, business visas are required. And people would be like, oh, I'll just, you know, I'm going to be there for 3 weeks anyway, and going to go to the beach. And we've heard of immigration officials being outside of like industrial areas outside Bangkok and checking visas before going into factories and things like that. And yeah, it's a very nuanced process.
And the difference, presumably, what is this? Is it several hundred dollars, or is it thousands of dollars?
No, hundreds of dollars. So, like I would say, the most expensive service we have would be with the associated government fees would be to get a passport in 3 days, and that would be right around $700, roughly. That's with the government fee, which is a couple hundred dollars in and of itself. So it's like I said, it's a fraction of the total cost of a trip.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's what you have to pay to get that
Yeah,
service, and
exactly.
you know, you can do it really slow and get it a lot cheaper, no doubt. But you didn't do that, though, did you? And
Right,
the time's
exactly.
gone now. So no.
Well, let's face it, if you start pricing your own time at between $50 and $100 an hour, then you're very rapidly going to rack up that bill.
Oh yeah, especially if you're, higher up in a company and your productivity is based on what you can put out in a day, and you have to go wait in line at the Chinese consulate for three, 4 hours easily, and then come back again.
Do you, in a way, do you facilitate world trade? Is that the thing that you do in a way? Is that
I would absolutely say so, especially I would say the 65 to 70% of all of our business is business travel, and the need for reliable, fast, uninterrupted visa compliance is critical for the where we are in the world right now. I don't think companies could get by with relying on people doing it on their own by any means.
So, Rob, if the vast majority of this is business travel and it is facilitating international trade, is the latest tariff situation having a positive or a negative effect on your business?
Knock on wood. Currently, we haven't felt anything. However, the current tariff situation with China, if that does go into effect, I think that's going to completely halt a lot of business travel. One of our biggest clients is a cargo airline, and we process Chinese visas for their pilots and crew. And their inability to be able to predict what flights they're going to be able to take or how in demand their service is going to be is a big cause for concern for them. It is changeable still at this point, but I think there's a looming threat there that hopefully will be resolved. Conversely, oftentimes diplomatic challenges are beneficial to our business. During the pandemic with China, this is when China really started pushing a lot of these new requirements that made it a more complex visa. We would watch what was happening in the news, with COVID and blaming COVID on China, whatever the situation was, or a there's like a military deal with the US and Australia or something like that. We'd watch visa requirements tick up, and it's like, oh, this diplomatic tit for tat. They use this visa process oftentimes as a bargaining chip, and so sometimes we benefit from the turmoil that's happening. But the tariffs, I think, pose a completely different threat than what we've had to deal with in the past.
I think it's a step along a way. I don't think the tariffs are an end point. I think it's just a move in a game that, frankly, the Americans have been losing for too long. And I don't blame him one bit. And if we had a reasonable government over here, that which we don't, we'd have built a better trading relationship with India. And I love India. I've been there, just love it. I have an Indian member of staff. I just love the people, think they're great. I think you can do trade deals that are wrong, as well as trade deals that are right. But
I agree. And
yeah.
it's been the kind of the like the, to the positive side of it. Yes, there is need a change. I think, back in the 1990s, NAFTA really opened up the globe to, it wasn't just Canada and Mexico, but NAFTA opened up the globe to world trade. And while there's many benefits, a lot of it hasn't changed. And, like there's definitely pivot points where, especially everything's instant now. You know, Amazon or what's the one out of China, Alibaba, like all these international, like you can buy a garment that's made in China 2 weeks ago and it's shipped to you like in 3 days, you know. And it's like there's got to be some shifts and adjustments to all of that, and hopefully that's all this is a pivot point and not an end point, like you said.
Your publicist, I hesitate to call them that because they're probably some little guy in a back room somewhere that you've got locked to a desk. But he said your approach to business integrates mindfulness with strategic thinking. Is that how you see yourself? I mean, are you sort of quite a thoughtful, appreciative person, but you've also got a strategic view?
Yeah, I would say that's a great description of me. I truly appreciate the cult, all the cult. Like, so we're like, if we're talking about global business here, we're talking about completely different people and societies around the world. You know, UK and US, or US and Canada, you could say we're very similar or homogeneous in that regard. But like, when we're doing business with India or Saudi Arabia or China, there's also a respect for what their needs are. And I think if you stay focused on what our American needs are solely, I think you lose aspect of where someone else is coming from and the needs of their government and what they're trying to do, regardless of whether you agree or disagree with, you know, like the overall policy, or, you know, communist or democratic or whatever. I think being mindful of where everyone's at and what everyone's trying to do is a crucial piece to move forward. Where we're at now, I think, especially as we become so connected instantly, you know, a video, like we're talking across the ocean live on a video, it's happening everywhere all day in business, and appreciating where people are. I think that's a critical step. It's also an advantage if you can recognize that when dealing with people.
Well, I'm real. Kevin's one of these avatars that we've got going.
Oh, that's right. I've spent months and months and months creating what you see in front of you out of AI and making it look remarkably similar to what was there before.
But apart from that, no, it's you seem your service is very personalized. It's obviously personalized because it's all one, almost like one by one. I mean, there might be companies who are batching these things up, but broadly speaking, they're all individuals. So you have that personalized sort of focus, but you're also big now on tech.
Yes.
Tell us more about that.
Yeah, with the as I mentioned before, there's been a shift to electronic visas, and everything's becoming electronic, and we've been able to keep up with that, but I think there's kind of a tipping point. We're either there or it's coming very soon where everything's going to be digitized. And if we can't stay at least at the leading edge of AI and quick resolution, quick shifts with technology, we're gonna fall and become obsolete quickly. So we're right at the end of a long process of developing a new software solution to step into this AI world and digital compliance, we'll call it. And we're creating a tool for travelers, whether it's crew members or executives or could be travel agencies, that will be able to keep track of visa compliance. So, oh, you have a trip coming up in September, but your passport expires in August. You know, you're going to want to start doing things here in June to prepare for that trip. And there's going to be automated notifications about expiration dates. And then one of the cool features is a storage location for all of your documents. So you can have scans of your passports, all your visas. Should something happen to your passport, you'll have it all within stored quick storage if you didn't have a photo of it. So we're stepping fully into the digital age, as it were. And I don't think you could in this industry be viable for too much longer if you weren't doing that.
And presumably you have some a few competitors doing, like you said, I think right at the beginning, other people can get into it, but presumably what you're doing, that tech change has cost a fair bit. Not everybody can afford that. So basically, will this give you some sort of sustained advantage, or is it something that you just have to do to keep up?
I think maybe equal parts of both of that. As I mentioned, like we have to be able to evolve. And then being AI ready, so to speak, obviously we're still in the very, like we're just seeing the very infancy, the sprout of the seed of AI, what it's going to do. And I think getting into that realm early, even if it's not like, oh, I'm investing millions of dollars into this AI driven software, but if we have our foot in and we're ready to grow with it as it becomes more accessible and more widespread, I think that will be a critical advantage for not only our clients, which is very important, but internally for our staff. Like we have to be able to provide accurate information. Like we can't let requirements slip away. Like, oh yeah, sorry, you need to have this. You're gonna miss your trip now.
Myself and my colleague are doing a, along with an Australian, a former guest of ours, are doing a webinar in for Australians in about 3 weeks' time. And one of the things that we're going to be looking at are workflows within an AI platform that we have. And I'm still, I'll be honest with you, still it's fresh onto the plate, but it's, you know, at the moment some of the bits need to be refined. But the whole idea of this is that you can almost step by step set a process, a bit like you outlined a minute ago, and almost like do a process, right? I need all this. Then next process, need all this, and it all somehow works together. And it's just mind blowing because the experts that you can build to do something like maybe checking compliance and so forth, that all can be done. And you just think there's no end to this. It really
No.
is
And I'm seeing
fascinating.
that all the time in the finance world, Graham.
Yeah, I bet.
Accounts payable, for instance. Making sure that you've got everything in a row so that when you're buying something, you've got the right purchase order. AI can then check the invoice and make sure the invoice matches the purchase order and do all sorts of clever things with the document to recognize where bits of data are. And an invoice is going to be different depending which company it comes from, but the AI is clever enough to pretty much pick up what it needs and do all sorts in that process. And AI stepping in to look for potential fraud as well. So I could see a great application in Rob's area to do all of that basic compliance work on the documents that I, and information that's coming in for clients and be pretty sharp in telling the client, oh, we need something else, and leaving the human to do some more value-added work.
That's exactly where we're coming at it with. There's still the need for human intervention in all of this process. And with AI, how I see it is that some of the menial tasks that often create more errors will be able to be trained with AI, which will take, I don't want to say stress, but maybe pressure off our team, you know, like, oh, I can rely on this tool to help me. And then it's also because it's the one big thing for us that will help free up time, will be almost more, way more self-service customer service, common questions, you know, like the knowledge base or the checking order statuses, like just type in your order numbers, like, oh, hey, it's here. You know, it's, just really, like we said, this is all still in the infancy. It's mind blowing what it can do now. I can't even imagine 2 years from now, let alone 5 or 10 years from now.
I definitely have that sense of I don't know, immediacy. I think it's bringing the future forward closer to you all the time, and just it's just making sure you can grab a hold of it. But you know, I'm excited by it all, and it's the it's understanding where you can best apply it effectively for people, and that's what I've got to be able to do in the next couple of weeks, just to figure out that part of the webinar. But it's there. These abilities with AI in this particular thing that I'm promoting is it's mainly marketing, but you know, you start thinking about it, it could be anything. It could be literally anything. Presumably, we could probably even turn our hands to finance.
Oh yeah.
In your world, Rob, you're going increasingly electronic, but you're dealing with a lot of highly sensitive personal data there. Now,
Yes.
this is much more than your name, address, and email. Now, once you've got your passport number, your date of birth, your home address,
We have
your
everything,
next of
all of
kin, you've got loads of stuff.
medical history. Do you have medical history as well? I mean, presumably, if you have, like me, if you're a diabetic, do we have to declare, am I diabetic?
There's some things, some applications ask about mental disorders, but we don't deal with too much of that on the medical side, but every other aspect, how many children you have in some cases, mother, father's name, place of birth.
Right, Kevin, that looks like you're going to be staying in Newcastle for quite a few years then, if that's the case. There'll be no further travel for you, Kevin.
That's a shame when we qualify for the Champions League and we're going to be all over Europe next season.
Won't be letting you anywhere near it. But
Yeah, but
yeah.
Rob, that my point was, you've got all of this stuff. You've got highly sensitive personal data, and the only parallel I can draw to this is kind of medical records held by medical practitioners and so on.
It's in
How would,
that.
if I was your customer, how would I know that the data that I'm sending you is secure?
That is a great question. We just completed, actually, for this application, an intensive security audit to become the terminology is SSAE SOC 2 compliant. In the U.S., I'm not sure where, if it's international, but like the medical level is called HIPAA, HIPAA compliant. We're right up there with HIPAA compliance with not only electronic data storage and where how things are stored, but it's how we handle if we print something out, is it shredded immediately, allowing people into the office, how are what happens if the portal shut down by an act of God, so to speak. So we've had to go through this intensive audit to fall into compliance with these standards. That said, so that's all a compliance. However, as a business owner, I don't ever want to be seen as someone that doesn't handle this seriously, because I mean, like you said, it's everyone's complete identifiable information.
But you've got a
And
distributed company though as well, because you've got people in, like you said, a chap in Mexico, you've got people dotted around the country. So it's not like you're all in one office.
right, so that's where all the digital compliance comes in, and knowing who's working for you, and really coming up with safeguards and restrictions to access to different things, and who's allowed into the office, firewalls on the internet, all sorts of things, even down to not using the workstations for social media, even, because it's like you click on the wrong thing on social media, it's like, who knows? And so it's a lot of one of the biggest lessons I learned through all this, while it was daunting and intimidating to see the list of a few hundred things that we had to go through, there wasn't one where I was like, oh, that's out of line, that's ridiculous. It was all like, well, this is good. I'd rather go through this and say that yes, we handle it this way. But yeah, especially in this digital age, we have to be on top of all that. Like, there's no way that I could feel comfortable doing all this without
You
that.
and your wife wanted to do, well, your wife wanted to travel, then you found out that the business that you chose is more of a stationary business, but I mean literally. So basically, you plan to travel. Presumably, you can extricate yourself from the business and do a little bit of traveling. Is that something that's part of your future? Is that something you want to build the business so you can have a better lifestyle with your family?
Oh, 100%, 100%. We love traveling. We travel whenever we can. And we're definitely working. We're well on our way to be able to work from pretty much anywhere. Like, I can take, we were in Germany last summer, and I was like, I'm going to leave my computer at home. And I just brought an iPad. And I was like, oh, I barely got it out. You know, like it was that was kind of a nice that attaboy kind of you're almost there. So yeah, that's the ultimate goal. Ideally one day we're living on an island, taking care of whatever we have to take
Great. But right
care
now you're in Chicago. I mean,
of.
you're doing a good job of that island, aren't you? I mean, I suppose it's a fairly big place.
Yes, big place, yeah.
Yeah, but you obviously are doing well, Rob. But what's the kind of future that you've got in mind? Is it you another 5, 10 years and then you're out? Or I mean, do you want to sell on, or are you building to sell?
That's a great question. Right now, we're building the business to take the business to a new level, like as we talked about, technology and other service offerings. And like with the software, we hope at some point that it will be a good middleware in the travel process, like the international travel process. Like it'll fit in. You know, like if you're with American Express Travel and you're online and you're booking a flight to Saudi Arabia, you'll see us pop up and say, "Hey, you need a visa." We're building towards that. And there's always, you know, what's the exit strategy? I don't have an immediate plan to sell, but you know, if that ever came up, that would also be a great way. So I think right now where we're at, both paths are the same road. Until I don't know what that point is yet, but I think right now the path to sale and the path to like an ongoing enterprise are one and the same right now.
It's usually at this moment in the podcast that Kevin's got a question that he's desperate to ask, because he's been thinking about that. So have you got that question, Kevin?
Oh,
Well, you could.
Graham, that's a good one. I've been thinking about these questions all the way through, and I've already asked the million-dollar question about security. You
Yeah.
expect me to think of another one?
Oh yeah. Sorry, I'd forgotten the fact you'd asked more than one question today. But okay, no, I genuinely I think
Yeah.
you must have another one before we wrap, Kevin.
I don't know. I think Rob, you've been a brilliant guest here, and you've pretty much answered everything I can think of.
Don't worry, Rob, he'll cut this bit out anyway, because
I
if
will. I'll cut this bit out.
anyway.
I'm doing this just to annoy Graham, you see.
So, Rob, you have been a great guest on the Next 100 Days podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kevin and Graham, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
So, a really interesting field, Graham. And on the surface, so visas to travel. But when you think about all the potential problems that that can throw up, and okay, Rob is operating a business out of Chicago looking for visas for Americans, but just as easily, and people in the UK need a similar service, need specialists that know exactly what they're dealing with, know the right information, what to do with it, where to take it. And yet again, we're seeing a business area that's being revolutionized potentially by AI.
I think AI suits the business because it's almost certainly going to improve the quality as well as the speed, and as long as the process is clear and they map that well, then it's going to augment their business really well. But for me, the price dynamic is there as well, because people are usually pressured to get this done, like you said when you were at PwC, pressured to get it done quickly. You know, and you might you're hanging on for that visa to come, but here's a guy that can get it done for you. You know, his office is next door to the Chinese consulate, so you know it's going to be handy if you want to go to China. So
Absolutely.
yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So
And if it's $200, $300 to get this visa sorted on top of the visa fee that you've got to pay the Chinese government, well, think about that in context of what's the flight to China cost you? I bet you've got to put at least another zero on that number just for the flight. What's the amount of business at stake? Well, you're not going to go to China if you're just after a 50-cent deal, are you?
No.
You're going to be talking probably $1 million minimum. So in the overall scheme of things, a couple
Max.
hundred dollars to speed a process up
Yeah.
and get it done. And the thing is, he's not just speeding it up and getting it done, but it's you're getting it right first time. Now, you
Yeah,
and I doing this, Graham,
yeah.
we would make mistakes. We'd probably end
Well,
up submitting the thing two or three times.
I couldn't remember the specifics, but I remember being flummoxed a little bit by the Indian e-visa, I think it was, and it was, as I say, it was just part of it that we just well, which way do we go? Do we declare ourselves this or that? And it basically, I think in the end, I think we did say we were business, but it was just anyway, whatever. I can't remember, but the thing about it, it was quite a stressful thing. And had somebody like Rob been in the background, don't worry, Graham, I'll take care of it all, then it was probably worth it. But that said, it's one of those business decisions that you need to take along the way. It's been interesting. I have to say, it's an interesting business. And when you do, look back at this, if you're listening to us, and that's fine. But if you get a chance to look at Rob's picture, you might be from Chicago, but he definitely looks, like you said, Nordic. He could easily be from Sweden.
Yeah,
I don't
he's a
know.
Viking, without a
Definitely,
doubt.
or a German, maybe a German as well. I think there's a bit of German in there. He's a sort of central defender. He's a fairly tall fella, but beyond that, Kevin, I've been Graham Arrowsmith.
I've been Kevin Appleby. Goodbye.
Goodbye.